Next case is 99-2246, State of Ohio versus Jose Santana. Watch your time, please stand the clock.
I'm sorry?
You need to watch your time on the clock there if you want to save 7 minutes. We tend to go take you over with your time.
Okay. If this is for you, I'm making from the top. This is Prosecutor Attorney Cashfield County. I'm here today representing the Thomasman's case in the state of Ohio. The case before the court today presents one issue for review, and that is, did the 11th District Court of Appeals err when it held that the defendant's affidavit, Jose Santana, was denied effective and reasonable counsel because his trial counsel did not file a motion to suppress when there existed a possibility that the motion may have been granted? And that was the holding of the 11th District Court of Appeals in the opinion written by Justice O'Neill. Now, the relevant facts of this case are that on March 5th, 1998, Phoebe's Mini Mart was robbed. The Mini Mart is located on Center Street in the city of Ashtabula. Jose Santana entered the Mini Mart with his face somewhat obscured, or his
also, doesn't this come down to whether or not it's ineffective counsel to not file this motion to suppress when it's a closed case, or whether or not that motion would be granted?
The United States has other opinions that it would not have been a closed case that the motion would be granted, and that it is not an effective assistance if defense counsel chooses not to file that motion, regardless of whether there is a closed case, as you put it.
Okay, well, that's, I mean, you're articulating a point of view in which you say it is automatically. That seems all right. That would be the answer to this case.
We're on the state police.
Yeah, I mean, that's all the reference. It is automatically, because that is a rule that the Court of Appeals did either. They didn't say you have to file it at the time.
But their standards, they just give us a possibility that if we need to grant it, in fact, does say that you have to file it at a single time. Because every single case, there is a possibility that it may be granted.
Right, so the word possibility is troublesome.
The word possibility and the word may.
But if we were to agree with you that it doesn't have to be filed in every case, that still doesn't get us off this case.
Yes, I believe it does, Your Honor. I believe that in this particular case, it was clear from the defense that was presented in the trial that there was a decision that by a competent attorney, as the trial counsel is presumed competent here in the state of Ohio, to not file this motion to suppress. The defense at trial was not that I did it, but that was lent itself to the filing of a motion to suppress to try to exclude that evidence. It wasn't me. I am not the person who perpetrated this crime. I happened to be walking along the street doing, with my friends. I happened to have the money. I happened to have friends. Those were all for different reasons than for having robbed this mini mart. So given the defense that was presented, the defendant was not provided ineffective assistance. And clearly there was a decision. While it's not in the record that a decision was never verbalized in the record, but
just in looking at the fact that it struck me that if a motion to suppress had been filed and granted, it it's unlikely that the reviewing court has said that was an abuse of discretion, and vice versa, yes, if it had been filed and denied. That either call would fit within the realm of discretion on the facts that you have here. Would that be a fair way to assess these facts?
Right, that's the purposes of argument, yes.
Okay, now, if it fits within that parameter, then should it be effective assistance of counsel to fail to file the motion?
No.
I mean, if it were outside the bounds, if you look at it and say, it would clearly be an abuse of discretion for the trial judge to grant the motion to suppress had it been filed, then I would see if your form follows from there. But if this fact had been within the confines, that the trial judge could have gone either way, it would not have been an abuse of discretion. Then shouldn't it necessarily follow that it is ineffective assistance of counsel not to file?
First and foremost, the state is of the opinion that had a motion been filed, it would have been overruled, no question about it. I think the facts would support that. These were the first individuals that the officer came upon. They were within the vicinity within a few minutes of this offense. He stopped them, indicated them why he was stopping them, started to do a simple pat-down search. That's when he discovered the money, and that's what led to the further detention. But for purposes of argument, if it were considered a close call, and that the court might have granted it, or possibly would, is it ineffective to not file it? No, because it really would be trial strategy. And there's no evidence that came from the record that it was not trial strategy. It's possible that even though the motion may be suppressed, an individual or a defendant may choose not to file a motion to suppress even though it may be granted. There's cases that were cited in the state's where a motion to suppress was actually filed, and then upon consideration, the motion was withdrawn as a tactic, as a trial strategy. And the state is of the position that that's in fact what happened here.
But what kind of trial strategy would you not file a motion that could knock out a lot of critical evidence against your client?
There are two things.
I mean, this all happens out of hearing the jury for the trial of fact. So what's the strategy
there? Two things that bring to mind. First, we may require not to have the other individuals who are walking along with the safety standards have to testify in motion to suppress about why they were there and what they were doing. Because as is indicated, when the defendant or the defendant out when he testified in his case, indicated that the other two and the officers as well. The other two had nothing to do with it. That was the statement to the officers. And it might be desired not to have them have to testify or be called to testify. Additionally, the description that was given was that of a white male. And as one of the facts that the appellate court pointed to in reversing the opinion or excuse me, the decision was that these were Hispanic individuals, which calls into issue a question of race, and maybe the defense did not wish to raise that issue. So there are two reasons, at least, that can be pointed to from the facts and the record, which would be why there might be a decision not to file a motion to suppress. And again, given the defense at trial, the defense was, not that I was there, it was me, but there was some reason, and so therefore, which would lend itself to file a motion to suppress or to suppress to exclude that evidence. It wasn't me. I wasn't the person. I had the wrong person. So given that defense, then a motion to suppress is not going to be in hand with that defense.
But isn't the problem here is that the Court of Appeals used the wrong standard?
Bottom line, yes, that is correct.
They said possibly instead of probably. Did they not?
Well, they used possibly may instead of a reasonable probability that, but for the defense counsel's errors, the outcome would have been different.
They really strayed from, we have spoken on this issue several times, and we have never used that term possibility. So if we were to accept the Court of Appeals opinion, we would be really enlarging or changing our standard in many previous cases.
Absolutely right. That is absolutely correct.
So would you discuss for us in relation to the facts of this case, the present holdings of this court and how they would have, should have affected the outcome of this case if the Court of Appeals had applied our previous holdings in this area?
If they had applied to the standard of the reasonable probability that this flowed from Strickland and Washington? Well, that's Strickland v. Washington sets forth the two-part test, which I'm sure everyone is familiar with. First is that the first prong of that is that counsel's performance was sufficient. There was an error, defense counsel did not do something. And then the second prong is that it prejudiced the client. Again, I would get to focus on that second prong and saying that there would be no prejudice that would be found to this client by the failure to file a motion to suppress. The defense still presented and was able to present the defense they chose to present. Again, it was not me, it was someone else who did this crime. And whether the motion to suppress was filed or not does not affect that defense, that avenue that they chose. If the defendant had chosen not to speak to stand, the outcome of the offense at all, that motion to suppress might have been, might have raised the issue for the prejudice in the case, for the evidence came into the state, and the defense did not hold under that. However, in this case, the defendant chose to say, I didn't do it. All of these things are here for other reasons, an explanation for everything. So basically, on that, there is no prejudice. Can clearly have some impact on the outcome of the trial. But it's you have the defendant has the burden of showing, the defendant I believe has the burden of showing that the outcome of the trial would have been changed had it not been for the counsel's failure to file the motion. Additionally, Your Honors, in Strickland, the court also articulated that the goal of this two-step test and of the ineffective assistance claim is not to make the system so burdensome so as to burden the criminal justice system to slow it down and so that it suffers in any way. And I think if the 11th District Court of Appeals decision in this case is allowed to stand, clearly that is exactly what will happen. Every case will be required to file a motion to contest. Every defense attorney will have to do that in every single case because there's always the possibility that a motion may be granted. And therefore, the system will be bombarded with these motions and will be, in effect, shut down. And that is very different.
Thank you, Ms. Todd. Ms. Moon.
Good morning, my name is Virginia Miller and I am the attorney representing Jose Santana in this case. As you're aware, he was convicted of aggravated robbery, as well as carrying a concealed weapon. And he was sentenced to the mandatory 3-year gun specification on the robbery charge and an additional definite term of 5 years. He also received 18 months to run concurrent with that sentence on his conviction for the carrying a concealed weapon. He was convicted in this case. The evidence that was presented at trial is in the record. The police officer, Officer Dibble from the Ashtabula City Police Department, testified he had overheard the radio dispatch of a robbery at the BBC Mini Mart. Within a minute, he was on his way over there. And approximately 7 minutes after that, approximately 0.3 miles from that store, he observes three individuals walking down the street. He passes these individuals, turns around, comes back towards them, he stops, says something along the lines of, there's been a robbery. I'm not even sure if he said it was at a store. Something along those lines, I want to check you guys out. Didn't ask these people for names. He just had them put their hands up on the car and started christening them. The first person that he christened was my client, Jose Santana. My client was just walking down the street. The only description that Officer Dibble testified to at trial, which is in the record, the only description he had was a white male. Now, had Mr. Santana, trial counsel, filed a motion to suppress, to contest that initial contact with the Ashtabula City Police Department, the outcome could have been very different. The standard that the 11th District Court of Appeals used was the possibility, and this court has used the probability standard. We can't just do them. That's in the 11th District Court of Appeals. My argument to you is it doesn't matter which standard you use. The evidence that is in the record from the trial court shows that there was sufficient evidence that imposed a duty upon his trial attorney.
So you're really saying that though the Court of Appeals used the term possibility, they could have, this fits the probability standard.
Yes, in this case, there's evidence in the record, facts in the record from the trial.
Of course, we wouldn't have taken this case, counsel, because we would have sorted all that out about whether the motion should have been filed or not, because we're not an error court.
Right, and it is necessary that all of us defense attorneys have some guidance on what standard to use. But in this case, the facts are so blatant that it is...
So we should fix it because it's a really, really bad error.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. In addition to the rest of us need guidance.
But if as a practitioner, though, in terms of guidance, wouldn't you say the courts...
I didn't either.
the court's jurisprudence is quite plain that the standard, following the U.S. standard, is probability.
Yes, but we also have to acknowledge that this goes on a case-by-case basis and what the facts are that are presented to the court. The Lott case, for example, which one of the justices had brought up with the argument with Ms. Cox, that case, there was, if I remember correctly, an identification, a lineup identification issue. Testimony was taken, and the court ruled that it would have been futile for a motion to suppress to be filed. That, and in this case, I don't believe it's possible to say it would have been futile to file a motion to suppress. I don't think we can stand here after reviewing the record and say it could have been granted either. But it's important to recognize that it's a basic constitutional right of everyone to have the effective assistance of counsel at trial. And in this case,
but
that performance was deficient.
Okay.
So you want us to say that the Court of Appeals was right but for the wrong reason?
Well, I'm not sure that that even works in this case, Your Honor.
Well, you say that the evidence is so strong that even anybody can see that it was probable, and even more than probable that the motion would have been granted. Correct?
On the facts that are in the record, yes. I have no idea what the final outcome would be because there's a lot of issues that would need to be delved into with the officer. We're dealing with approximate times that are in the record. The approximately 7 minutes after dispatch is when he has the three people walking down the street. These are approximate things. He says approximately 0.3 miles. And if we were actually to go through a suppression hearing, we would be able to get definite facts. And then based upon that, the trial court would be able to actually make an appropriate decision on the case. I can't say with any great likelihood it would have been granted. I can say, based on my professional experience and the standards that we are held to as an attorney, that there was a duty for his trial counsel to file that motion to contest the initial contact.
What's your response? Excuse me, you finish. What's your response to the appellant's argument that there were reasons for good trial strategy, or could have been good trial strategy, would have brought in the other persons who were accompanying the defendant and her friends in the color of the skin?
I can't see, without criticizing another attorney, I can't see that as a valid basis for allowing your client to risk conviction on this type of offense. That would be no trial strategy whatsoever. He always had the option to do what was done. I believe it was a Spriggs case where, as the attorney, perhaps to protect himself, he filed the motion to suppress with a motion for leave, and then later withdrew that motion. That is evidence of the record that the attorney made certain advisements to the client, and the client had indicated for one reason or another he did not want to proceed with that motion.
Was this the only evidence that the prosecution had that would have led to a conviction, or was there other evidence that this evidence would have been excluded?
There was physical evidence. I believe there was a videotape. I believe the person had been wearing a mask. There was the clerk of the store who testified about her observation, but once again, I believe the face was obscured. There might have been voice identification. Someone recognized the voice.
So how would this meet the Strickland test if the result would have been different?
In this case, had the motion been filed and granted, the exclusion of the money that was in my client's pocket, the food stamps in my client's pocket, the gun in my client's pocket, and his eventual confession, which he later recanted, would all have been excluded.
And you think then that you could say that the result would have been different?
The result would have been different at trial. I can't imagine that. We never know for sure what juries are going to do, but there was other evidence for it.
Counsel, I thought I understood that about this. There was a confession.
There was a confession.
And how was that handled at trial?
There was a statement taken The officer, Sergeant Cornelius, who took that statement, testified about how he took the statement. I believe he testified as to the times, and that was Mr. Santana's signature at the bottom. Sergeant Cornelius typed that statement, typed out his question, then typed out the response that Mr. Santana gave to him for each of those questions. I believe it was 4 pages long. At trial, Mr. Santana took the stand and recanted that statement.
Okay, but that confession went to the jury.
Yes, it did. Yes, that was one
of the... So now I'm really wondering, what kind of trial strategy would have you not file a motion to suppress, that potentially takes out a confession? What kind of a trial strategy is that, by any kind of effective?
Sounds like
it's looking like that. I mean, use your imagination now, because that's been presented to us by the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to conjure that up as...
I can't fathom a reason that one would do that as an attorney, not to file that motion. Even if a client did not want to proceed on the motion, I believe the attorney should file it and then file their motion to withdraw. I really am very reluctant to criticize trial counsel in most cases.
What did these two individuals that were accompanying your client on the street, did they testify at the trial?
No, they did not testify. And it is my understanding from the testimony that they were taken into custody, taken to a police station. I believe at least one of them gave a statement which was not introduced at trial. And were released. I don't believe there was ever any charges against the other.
So they were not called by the prosecution?
No, they were not called by the prosecution.
With all the stuff that was found on the defendant, did they find the ski mask?
No, there was no ski mask that was found.
This was 7 minutes after the robbery.
Approximately 7 minutes. I believe the testimony is approximately 7 minutes, and it's approximately 0.3 miles from the location of BB's main yard.
Presumably coat that he was wearing bore significant resemblance to the coat of the perpetrator on the videotape.
Right. And then,
so with the motion to suppress, you could still get some tough evidence.
Perhaps. I'm not sure. I believe the code itself would have been excluded. Most of these, and I have to confess, I did not view the actual videotape, but many of these videotapes are very grainy.
Yeah.
They're not particularly...
Why would the code be excluded?
It was evidence that was taken from him as a result of the stop that perhaps may have been found to be unconstitutional. Under Terry's standards, all the evidence flowing from that stop would actually have been excluded.
We don't evaluate ineffective assistance of counsel from the perspective of had we won, what would be kept out, do we, counsel? Sounds like that's what we're talking about here. We don't even look to say, had this been granted, a reason that then the result would have been different. That's not the issue. It's how likely it was that this would have been granted. That's the question about whether the result would have been different. It certainly flows therefrom, but you have to say whether or not that motion was a motion that it was so deficient to file that motion because of there's no strategy, there's no likelihood that it would be granted, but it has to be a probability.
Right.
Okay.
And in this case, there certainly would have been that probability. It would have been a meritorious defense.
It sounds like you say counsel was deficient. Now that's the first prong, isn't it?
Right. And the prejudice could be the second prong. Prejudice to Mr. Santana would have been had a motion been ruled out favorably by the trial court. But we weren't able to get enough evidence that is in the... I'm not sure if we could say about that for the trial court.
We measure the prejudice under the Strickland standard by there was a reasonable probability, but for the failure to file the motion, the result of the trial, the outcome would have been different. Now, counsel for the state says that, you know, there wasn't a lot of basis for filing it. There's a lot of upside to having it granted, and that seems to be your argument.
look at, there's a lot of both sides of that, but it's certainly
to having had it, right.
It certainly should have been presented. He hasn't. My client had it.
It would have been good, but we don't get, that's not the Strickland standard, is it? That would have been better strategy. That's not what we hold, counsel, or we don't, the Sixth Amendment doesn't guarantee the best defense.
Yes.
Or it only guarantees a constitutional level of representation.
That's right, it does. But what type of trial strategy is it to totally ignore that issue? When your client takes the stand at the trial, says, I was just walking down the street with two other people,
mm-hmm.
and the officer's testimony is consistent with them, that was the initial contact. I would request that this court clarify all this, these issues for us, as well as remand the case to the trial court for further proceedings. Thank you.
Is your client in jail?
Yes, he is still around.
How long has he been there?
Since the conviction date in 1998, the date on that.
And what's the length of the sentence?
8/14/98. On the burglar or the aggravated robbery charge, he was sentenced to 5 years. There was a 3-year gun specification
okay.
attached to that, which of course must be served first.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Ms. Cox, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds if you like.
She's probably on the street.
Thank you.